Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Good morning to you, almost 9:09 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in this morning. It is the first Tuesday of the month, even though it's the first kind of the date, first day. There was Labor Day, but that means Marianne Hamilton is here. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Good morning, Andy, and happy September.
Thanks for coming in today. I know it hasn't been the easiest last couple of weeks for you.
Yeah, that too. But I feel like I haven't seen you in, I think it's been 2 months.
Yeah, we missed last month. I was gone on a cruise, and I'm not going to take that back. It was fun.
Yes, of course.
Although I will say this. Now, I'm what they call a teetotaler. I don't drink alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. The cruise was out of New Orleans, and it was on Carnival. And the combination of those two things means that we were pretty much the only ones on that cruise not drunk the whole time. But it was still fun. And New Orleans is a cool town.
Did the ship captain want you to drive the ship because you're the only one sober?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We didn't ask them, but they have it. This amazes me. They have a drink package you can buy, mm-hmm. and they have one if you like soda pop, and I bought that in the past. I didn't do it this time, but then they have the alcohol drink package, and I figured it'd be, I don't know what, 20, 30 bucks a day. It's $75
a day.
For the alcohol drink package.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. I mean, if you can find, I found a great cabin for $500 for a week. That's an amazing price. Oh, but I'm also spending $75 times seven. That's, $600 or whatever. That's a lot of money.
I mean, even if you buy a nice bottle of wine, it's like, $30 or something a day.
Yeah, you could buy your, I don't. Wow. But anyway, so, and then they had, I thought this was funny. Your $75 a day pays for 10 drinks only. But you can have up to 10 drinks. And I'm like, so everybody that paid for it, they were trying to get their 10 in because they paid for them. I'm going to get my 10 in,
There's a good thing there's a hospital on board ship, I would be hospitalized with 10 drinks.
I know, seriously. And then there are, I guess our cruises, 10 was the number. There are other cruises, 15 is the number. You can have up to 15 drinks for your $75 a day. I'm like, who would drink 15 martinis in one day? I don't know anybody that could do that.
As you know, I'm not a teetotaler, but that would be way beyond my capacity, for sure.
So, anyway.
Wow, but, I'm glad you were more careful.
It was good. And we got to go. It was kind of scary. We went to a place called Celebration Key, which is kind of the trend that the cruise companies are buying little private islands. And this is a private island owned by Carnival. But the next week, two people drowned on that same place. It was the week after we came back, we weren't there. But it's like, I don't remember it being dangerous, but ouch. Ooh, two people are dead.
So. And you had a rough time getting home, as I recall.
Yes, we did. And,
your voice, you had the Lauren Bacall thing going on
laryngitis,
when you came back.
Yeah, it sounded like Rod Stewart or Kenny Rogers or Lauren Bacall or somebody. Yeah. But that's all gone, thank goodness.
Well, glad you're healthy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. In the news, and I thought it really would be appropriate to talk about this because you're kind of our senior fitness guru, but also you're a senior.
Yes.
And the big story, there were two big stories, and one has nothing to do with seniors. A Utah Tech student fell off a railing and died.
Yes.
It was Sunday. Almost 3 years to the day, within a few days, 3 years ago, the same thing happened. And I was talking with the ladies that work in dispatch, and they said that there was no alcohol involved in this one 3 years ago. He was floating around on the balcony and fell off the thing, and it was like a 50-foot fall. This one, they estimate, was about 70 feet yesterday, the day before yesterday, the kid died. Don't know if there was alcohol involved. I have no idea. It was a 22-year-old, so you're legal to drink at 21 in Utah, so maybe, but I don't want to speculate. We don't know.
Sure.
But just a sad deal with someone that young. And then the other big story, of course, was a wrong way crash. Everybody's talking about this one. And there are differing opinions about the driver. So what happened was an 89-year-old woman got on the freeway going the wrong way, going southbound in the northbound lanes. She was driving a very big car, a Cadillac Escalade. Those things are really big.
Yes, they are.
And sadly, she hit head-on another vehicle. It killed her. It also killed the two people in the front seat of the car going the right direction. Mm-hmm. And two women in the back seat were seriously injured, but they are expected to recover. But it sparked kind of this debate about about seniors and driver's licenses. Now, I know, Marianne, you have some perspective on that. Not only are you a senior, but you also used to work for the DMV. Tell us about it.
I did. Years ago, I was one of the first women to become a driver's license examiner in California, which meant that I was out in the car with people who were getting their driver's license.
And that has got to be a scary prospect right there.
And it lasted about 3 years, and I thought, I'm going to die. Not seriously, but it was pretty stressful, for sure. Uh-huh. And I have to say that the scariest drivers were the younger kids, the older folks. So what would happen is at a certain point, if you can't pass the vision test anymore, they will take you out for a road test to see if you're compensating for your loss of vision. Or people's relatives quite often would bring in, you know, okay, granddad.
I'm a little worried about granddad. Grandpa,
and we'll give them a road test. And in some cases, you know, they were still fine. It was just that, you know, the kids were kind of going, well, you know, granddad's 75. He shouldn't be driving anymore. Well, hello.
A number means,
I'm not that far away, honestly. And in some cases, there were some people who absolutely, it was the right call. They should not be on the road. There was one gentleman who, we were driving in Daly City and driving up into San Francisco, and the road test required you to make a right turn and then two blocks up make a left turn, so you had to get over two lanes. And he got into the middle lane and he just kind of stopped in the middle of traffic.
Oh no. Put his blinker on and stopped?
He just stopped. I said, well, sir, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm stopped for that stop sign. And he's pointing to a parking meter.
Oh,
and I
no.
said, okay, well, this is a really beautiful car. Why don't you just pull it over? Could I drive it? And he said, oh, yeah, sure. And I mean, he really, really didn't have any idea what was going on. And in that case, it was the right call. That said, I did take road tests with a number of seniors who were totally fine. And they might end up with a restricted license where they could just drive around their neighborhood or go to the grocery store or something and maybe not go on the freeway or something. And in that case, that's totally adequate. You know, they would be completely fine. Would I want to see them, you know, on a racetrack, you know, in an F1? Probably not. But they're going slow enough. They're being careful. They're compensating for anything that might be going on with their bodies. And, you know, in that case, it was totally fine. But this 90-year-old woman, I would question if maybe there were some cognitive issues going on. I'm not quite sure. But if you're driving the wrong way on the freeway or on the entrance, which happened to be right by our house, that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Perhaps somebody from her family should have sent up a warning in that case.
Well, you know, and the thing I was thinking about, first of all, if you look at if you're going the wrong way on off ramps that are, there are a lot of signs that are telling you you're going the wrong way. So if somehow you're confused enough that you don't get those, and then you get on the freeway and cars are zipping by you the opposite direction, I just think, I mean, she went almost a mile in the wrong direction. There should have been some alarms going off, something in your mind going, okay, something's not right here, and pull over.
Were there people in her back seat, you said, that were also injured?
Or no, that was the other car.
The other car. Yeah. I would say, think that somebody would be screaming at her, Grandma, you're going the wrong way.
And my wife reminded me, so my wife did foreign exchange in France years ago. I mean, we're talking 30-something years ago. And she got in the car with this French host lady that was hosting her, who got on the Autobahn going the wrong direction. And my wife didn't speak a lick of French.
How do you do that?
And she's like yelling. She's yelling at her in English, and gesturing and doing everything. She said, I thought I tried everything, and she did eventually. And I'm like, eventually, what does that mean? Well, we went a while the wrong direction.
Oh, man.
But,
that's a testament to the other drivers. They were able to maneuver around her and not smack right into her.
So the debate in the comments on this story, should seniors be allowed to drive after a certain age? Should they be, should there be a test every year to test their cognitive abilities, their vision, et cetera? I mean, if you're mistaking a parking meter and a stop sign, that's probably not a good thing. But I would submit to you, and I told you this pre-show, most of the accidents, like 70-something percent of all accidents on the road today are drivers between the ages of 16 and 21.
Yep.
It's not the seniors. Mm-hmm. And I know this is highlighted because of what happened, and it's really sad, and I mean, it's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. But let's not kind of condemn all senior drivers now because of one incident.
Exactly. And, you know, the seniors have more experience. They're calmer in more situations. They've been able to
drive slower.
Yeah, well, there's that. But if another potential hazard comes up, I think, you know, our DNA is more, you know, hardwired to be able to get around it. Uh-huh. Where a young person who hasn't experienced that before is kind of go, ah, you know, throw their hands up and do, oh my gosh. I was just telling you before we got on the air that Doug and I were in Duck Creek this weekend, and we were hiking yesterday, and we came around a turn, and, you know, four kids on dirt bikes just about took us out because they were just, woohoo, you know, having a great old time.
So these weren't seniors, then,
No,
you're
these
saying.
Were maybe 16, maybe, if you know. And I can't cast aspersions on an entire, you know, demographic, but I think that senior drivers tend to be more experienced and less agitated behind the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I think we have a caller. Are you online here on the Andy Griffin Show? Are you there?
I am here.
Oh, great. Hey, what's up? What's on your mind?
My wife and I were talking about this last night, mm-hmm. and, you know, I agree with you, having had four kids, and it's not a matter of if, but when they get in an accident.
Yeah.
That's part of the teen years, but why can't they implement a that track system, like when you go through the exit of at the airport or what have you, and that if you try and go over it the wrong way, it'll puncture your tires.
Mm, yeah, that's definitely one of the things.
On the on ramps.
The only thing I had heard, and I don't know this is just what I had heard, is, well, does that make a problem for emergency vehicles if they need to get to an accident or something? But
I'd say if it saved one life and that emergency vehicle didn't have to go to the accident because the person was driving the wrong way.
That's a good point.
It would be worth it. There's got to be something. I agree with you, too, that, you know, there's a lot of different signals that are indicating that you're going the wrong way. So, and that could happen to a kid or it could happen to a senior. But I think that we need to go one step further and figure out how we can almost make it dummy-proof. And
stop them, yeah. I did an article on this, I don't know, maybe a year ago on our website here, 890kdxu.com. And one of the things, they were actually talking about implementing like a flashing light system to warn other drivers that this was happening. Maybe some kind of warning system for other drivers, but that kind of... A lot of people were like, we don't want to spend the money on that.
It's expense, but, I'm sure.
Yeah, you make a good point. If one life is saved, then it's worth it, right?
Yeah, the other thing is that, and I can't remember if it was a requirement or a suggestion, and that whenever you have the wrong way drivers, aren't the State Highway Patrol, aren't they given the authority to basically crash into that vehicle?
They are.
But it's not a mandate, right?
No, I think it's an individual, you know, depending on the case on what's going on. But I have seen, I mean, there have been video of police officers crashing them purposely to get them to stop because they wanted to save people's lives. So,
well, the thing is that if that officer did do that and the person driving in the other vehicle happened to die, then he'd have to, you know, psychologically deal with that.
Not to mention the lawsuits and all that, yeah.
I think any stopgap measure we can put in there, including, you know, the advisory that warns other drivers that there's a wrong-way driver coming, would, I think, be worth the money.
You know, and I was thinking about this accident. I mean, you hear about this. It seems like it happens late at night and maybe involves some kind of impairment, but this happened at 6:20 in the evening. There was plenty light outside. There was no alcohol involved. It was just one of those things. It's just like, man, why did this happen? But
yeah.
So, all right. Thank
you
for the call.
I'm wondering if it might have been, you know, sometimes when the sun is going down, depending on the direction, you get that sun in your eyes and you can't see all the signals and signs. So,
yeah. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you calling in. Yeah. Talk to you later. A couple of years ago, and I say a couple, it's probably been 10 years, I had a friend who was killed. I knew her from sports stuff that I did, but she was walking along, I want to say Buena Vista.
Okay.
And the driver was in a big pickup truck that had the big wide mirrors because they have a trailer quite often. Mm-hmm. And she was walking along, and that driver was driving right into the setting sun.
Oh, it's dangerous.
even though she was on the shoulder, because his mirror was sticking out far enough, the mirror hit this woman and killed her. And it was a it was awful. Everybody involved, including the woman who died and the man driving the truck, were traumatized. And it was a really sad occasion. But I know when I'm driving and looking into the sun, man, it is so hard to see anything.
And right? I'm short, so quite often the visors don't come all the way down low enough to block that sun. I struggle once in a while.
We don't know. I don't know. 620, is that? I mean, obviously, you would be looking into the sun a little bit because you're driving southwest. Yeah. But I don't know that it would be low enough to be a factor in this. I have no idea.
Who knows? I'm just going to add one last thing that I really appreciated about being here in Utah. When I got to be a certain age, instead of getting my driver's license automatically renewed in the mail, I was requested to come in and have a vision test, which I thought was really, really a good idea. And fortunately, in between the time I'd received my first license here and that time I went in, I'd had cataract surgery on both eyes. And so my vision was really, really, you know, much, much, much greatly improved. And they said, oh, yeah, you're great. I had been prepared to take a road test and the written test as well. And they said, oh, no, your vision's fine. You know, said all I wanted to check.
Wow. Let it go.
Yeah. But I respect that Utah has that requirement.
For me, the thing that has affected me so far, maybe it is cataracts, I don't know, but when the lighting is dim, I have a hard time reading things. Like
and
right
that's
now,
called age.
Yeah, I guess so. It comes into play mostly when I'm doing football games in the press box, and the press box is dark, and I'm trying to read the roster and see the kids' numbers all the way out there.
Do you have a little light on your page or something? Or?
Yeah, but then people, I can't see you, turn that off, and you don't have it. But, like street signs at night, or not like a stoplight or even a stop sign, but like trying to see the name of a street as we drive by, and I'm driving, and it's dim out there. Part of getting old. You're right, getting old. So we're talking with Mary Ann today, and again, we're talking a little bit about that runway crash. Somebody did text. By the way, if you want to text into the show, 435-467-5842. This guy's a teaser text, right? He says, for years I have had an invention idea that would help with this and other things traffic related, but I can't find the right person to go forward with it.
Oh.
Well, Ryan, tell us what it is. No, I guess he doesn't want to tell us because then it would be out.
He should go to Innovation Plaza, Utah Tech University.
There you go, Innovation Plaza.
They do all kinds of great, cook up your idea processes and bring them to fruition.
Let's we did want to talk a little bit about what Marianne's been going through the last few days, but I figure we're only like 4 minutes away from a break.
Okay.
So let's talk about calendar stuff first, and then we'll get to that stuff, get to that later. Okay, so tell us what's going on. What's happening? What's coming up?
Well, this is September. We're, into the fall when all
holy smokes, it's September.
Things start cooking and they stop cooking, so they get more active in St. George. This month is the second annual Dixie Days, which is September 15th to the 21st.
So 2 weeks from yesterday, right, is when it starts?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so Dixie Days, we had, Peach Days in Hurricane, you have Cotton Days in Washington City, and Swiss Days. We didn't have anything in St. George, really.
Right.
So Dixie Days was invented, I think, 2 years ago, was it? And now we have something. What is it?
It's a celebration of this area's heritage and, the settlers coming here. Was it 1865, I think, or 69, 65?
Yeah, I think
Yeah. And a lot of activities planned around that to, you can take treks to see historical points of interest. There's a, drone show. There's all kinds of cool stuff. And we have the entire calendar, which you can find online for sure. If you just Google Dixie Days St. George.
So there's, if you're into golf, they have a four-person scramble.
Sold out.
Well, I'm a terrible golfer, so I'm not going to do it anyway. And then a drone show.
Yes.
Now, the drone show, now, folks are, I really feel like maybe people will never give up fireworks shows, but drone shows are pretty darn
really
cool.
It was really cool last year. It was amazing. It was really amazing.
It's basically like a fireworks show, only it's drones, and they can make shapes. Mm-hmm. It's just
it
really
can be
neat.
Programmed to do, the American flag or whatever. And there's a whole event on Monday night, the 15th at 9 o'clock from downtown St. George. Best place to see it is anywhere with a view of the Red Hill.
Now I see on the 16th, I believe it is a film screening of My Father's Highway. Do you know anything about what that is?
Yes.
Okay, I knew you would. That's why I asked.
It was actually screened at DocuTalk a couple years ago or several years ago. Jimmy Hughes's father, I believe, was responsible, sort of led the team that did the burrowing through the gorge that had never been done before.
Nice.
And it's all about how that came to be. It was a 14-year process, I believe.
Getting from here to Mesquite, that cutting through the mountain, basically.
Correct, yeah.
Wow.
So it's a terrific film. It's really, really wonderful. It's only an hour and 14 minutes. That'll be at the Electric Theater on Tuesday, the 16th.
At 5 p.m., doors open at 4:30. And again, it's you don't have to spend all night there. It's an hour and 14 minutes.
Yep.
So you can get out there and go get some dinner at one of the local
right next door at Capoletti's.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, what else is going on during Dixie Days? Is there parade, rodeo, things like
absolutely.
That?
That's happening on Saturday. And there's a Dixie Days Dash, which is either a 2K or a 4K race.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll probably be doing that one.
Which one? The longer one?
Probably the longer one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Which is still not very long, 4K.
Correct. That's at 8 o'clock in the morning at Vernon Worthen Park. And then after that is the 90th annual St. George Lions Dixie Roundup Rodeo Parade at 9 o'clock.
I feel like there might be horses involved.
I would think so, yeah. And that is basically starting at about 200 West, and it goes along 100 South, and ends up at the Dixie Sun Bowl. And, of course, there's always the Dixie Roundup Rodeo going on pretty much Friday, Saturday, and I think... No,
I do have the carnival on Sunday.
Yeah, the roundup. The rodeo starts Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it's three nights. That's 6 to 11 p.m. at the Sun Bowl. And then there's the carnival in Town Square going from 5 until 10. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Sunday it's actually 2 until 10.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Saturday the 20th, pretty much anything to do with the city is free. You got Sand Hollow Aquatic Center, Thunder Junction, St. George Carousel, SunTrans, the bus services, the Rec Center, and the St. George Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And it all costs exactly $0 and 0 cents. So I love those numbers. Free is one of my favorite
free
words.
Free is one of my favorite words for sure.
So,
On Tuesday and Wednesday, they have the Dixie Treks. You can see the St. George Tabernacle Attic and Original College, Watercress Springs, Pioneer Park Interpretive Trail, and Red Hills Water Tank, and the Heritage Cove and Escalante No. 2 Oil Well Disaster of 1935.
Mm-hmm.
There's a full schedule of all that. That's both Tuesday and Wednesday. Those are free.
And I see Wednesday morning, the Founding Father statue unveiling.
Yes. Yeah.
Do we know who the statue is of?
I believe four or five.
Wow.
Yeah. People being installed there in the garden south of the College of Education building at the university.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's a full
day. Think they'll ever put up a Mary Ann Hamilton statue?
Oh, God, I hope not. Well, it wouldn't cost that much money because it wouldn't require that much.
It would be smaller, that's true.
Yeah.
They put one up of me, it would cost twice, three times as much. So.
Yeah, bronze would be...
All right, So, that's all coming up. Dixie Days.
Dixie Days.
Yeah, September 15th through 21st. Mm-hmm. And, this is kind of a... I heard a couple of people, they're manufacturing a thing so they can make money. It's not... They're not.
They're not
trying to make money. This is all about... I think finding a way to celebrate
city pride,
what Dixie is,
the
spirit of Dixie.
Spirit of Dixie,
as it were.
I meant to mention on Thursday evening there's the dinner on Main Street, which is really, really
phenomenal. That's been really cool.
That was gorgeous last year. The weather could not have been more beautiful, and everybody was sitting outside. Main Street is closed down between the Boulevard and almost one south. I mean, not that far, but maybe Tabernacle. And it's just beautiful. Tables all the way up and down the street and people sitting outside enjoying a beautiful dinner. Several different restaurants are providing the
food. So if I recall, you have to pick which restaurant kind of food that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, barbecue is going to sell out fast. I'm just telling you right now.
Yeah.
So if you want that. And then you're out there in the middle of the street on these tables.
And there's music at either end, and you just commune with your community, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful experience.
And Marianne will dance for you.
Okay.
No?
Thanks, Andy.
No. Well, you don't have to, but
okay.
It seemed like it would be a perk right there.
It would be a fun thing to do, for sure.
Dixie Day, September. All right, let's 15th through 21st. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we want to talk about, well, you know, it used to be doctors would kind of poo-poo the effect emotions have on physical well-being. We'd be like, nah, you know, whatever, you're mm-hmm. fine. As long as you're exercising, it doesn't matter if you're sad or if you're lonely or whatever. And they've, in the last, I would say, honestly, it's only been the last decade or so, they're finally going, you know what, that kind of does have an actual effect on your physical well-being. So we're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. Let's do weather first.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. She's Marianne Hamilton, former Miss Senior Universe.
Yeah. 3 years ago. It's crazy.
It's been that long?
Yeah.
Time flies,
2022,
right?
I got the crown
in
January.
Well, you still look fantastic.
Well,
still look fantastic. Yeah, although, very rarely can you find Marianne Hamilton without some sort of bling somewhere. You just a regular t-shirt and jeans. And,
but, you know,
and Earth without art is just eh. Should be meh, but eh is good too. Eh,
yeah.
That's Canadian right there. Eh.
Eh.
Without eh.
Yeah.
Anyway, Marianne, thanks for coming today.
Actually, I had the earrings on, so I've got a little bling.
Oh, you do have a little bling. Okay,
yeah.
They were covered up by the headphones. I didn't see them, so. You had, unfortunately, a tough experience in that you lost mm-hmm. your brother not that long ago. Was it like a week or so ago?
Today, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, at this point in life, we're old enough that mm-hmm. we have lost people close to us. And I'm not to diminish what's going on with you, but we all have had, at this point, some tragedy in our
you
lives.
You lost your father-in-law recently as well.
Yeah, and lost my mom 5 years ago, and I lost my brother. It's actually been 28 years ago since my brother died. But like I said, it used to be the doctors would be like, well, you know, you're sad for a minute, and then you get over it, and you're fine. There's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
And they're finally starting, I think, to acknowledge that things like sadness, grief,
mm-hmm.
Loneliness, these things like these emotions really do play a big part in our physical well-being. And I know you did some research on that. Tell us what you learned.
Well, I was feeling some physical manifestations last week for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Mostly digestive, because that's kind of what happens to me when I get anxious or upset or something. My body kind of rejects food. Anyway.
That's why you're so skinny.
Not a fun way to do it. So two things happen. So I have gone back to teaching water aerobics, which is, you know, kind of a nice development. There's a brand new...
But you stopped because of your hip, right? Was it your hip that was kind of sore?
I've made the stipulation that I'm not going to be doing more than a couple classes a week because it causes inflammation. And amazingly enough, as soon as I stopped doing it, inflammation went away. So I had subbed last Monday for one of the instructors who's out with a new knee. And I came out to the car afterwards, and there were three texts from my two phone calls and a text from my sister-in-law saying, you know, your brother's passed away, and I felt just horrible.
Yeah.
And she tried to call me. So it was a really, really bad day, and I was having a hard time with food. Like, just everything I'd eat would just go away. So I was starting to wonder what was going on. And coincidentally, I also had an appointment to have my hearing checked, and I was going to cancel that. And I thought, you know, you and I have talked so often about how hearing can be a cause of dementia.
Yeah.
My brother died after suffering with dementia for several years. And I thought, well, there's no better way to honor him than to go get my hearing checked. You know,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So I went to the place, and I'm not going to say where it was, but I had learned recently that you should have your hearing appliances upgraded every 2 years, or at least it'd been almost five for me.
I just didn't know.
And so, unfortunately, the technician took my appliances away to sort of tweak them. We tested my hearing, and there really wasn't, you know, significant loss since last time, which is good. But he managed to break both of them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait, he took them to fix them and broke them.
Yes, they're little, they're the ITC in the canal hearing aids, and they have a little door on the back where you take out the battery and replace them, which unfortunately I have to do every couple of days. But anyway, there's a little door, and he took the doors off and managed to break them both.
Oh boy.
And he came back and said, well, sorry, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you know, can I get, can first, can you fix them? And secondly, can I have a loaner in the meantime?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. And he went away and he came back and goes, well, they don't make them anymore. Okay, what does that mean? Well, you can get some new ones. I said, well, can you just fix these? Well, they don't make the parts anymore. I said, well, could you possibly maybe call other places and see if they're available? So that's what they did. And so he took them away and gave me some loaners, which I'm not loving. But anyway, long story short, that was the day my brother passed away. And I thought, okay, Steve, this is for you because, you know, I don't want to have anything that might potentially cause, you know, dementia, which is what he was suffering with for a couple of years. He'd been in memory care, and then the last, I think right before Easter, his wife put him into a hospice because his body was starting to shut down. And indeed, a few days before he passed away, he wasn't able to swallow pudding or jello or anything. He just, you know, everything was stopping.
I was so familiar with my father-in-law. Yeah.
But he went quite peacefully, apparently. We had been out to see him 2 weeks before, which was great. They're in Central Valley, California. And he wasn't speaking, and he didn't really know who we were. But I came around to his side of the bed. He was lying on his side, and his eyes opened up, and he grabbed onto my wrist and, like, just wouldn't let go. And we were there for hours, and he wouldn't let go the entire time.
Wow.
So I feel like he knew that there was some connection still, and it was really, really a beautiful way to kind of say goodbye. So anyway, all of that said, when he passed away, it was not unexpected, but it's hard. You know, it's hard to lose your loved one. And I had three older brothers. The older one had passed away when he was 49. He'd had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He went into remission and had a heart attack and passed away, which was bizarre. Anyway, so then Steve passed last week. Anyway, so all of that said, I was curious if there were physical implications about the grieving process on the human body. And in fact, there certainly are a ton, and all of which were in line with what I was experiencing last week, which was, you know, it's obviously a very, very stressful situation, losing a loved one, and it can have a really profound impact on your mental and your physical health. So I was reading a research study by a gentleman who's a director of the Laboratory for Stress Assessment and Research at UCLA. And it basically, it said that the root of all of this, these symptoms, can be traced back to our evolutionary response to losing social connection. Basically, you know, as humans, we're really, really programmed and motivated to want, you know, warm, supportive relationships. When one of those is taken away from us, our body kind of interprets that as a danger. And they're sort of like that flight, impetus or response or something.
And I would submit not just humans, right?
Yes.
I mean, also a lot of species. If they lose their security blanket, as it were,
absolutely,
their body reacts negatively.
Yeah. So when you lose someone you've been with for a long time, your body and your brain can go really on to overdrive to protect you from potential dangers to your whole social environment. Your body starts ramping up your immune response. It sends out immune cells throughout your body that could deal with possible physical wounding that might occur, which is a really interesting process. But the problem with that was then you have all those immune cells going through your body. Your immune system lowers this antiviral defense system. So, like, if you've ever been stressed out, then you get a cold afterwards. That's often what's happening, is because your viral response is, you know, it's been weakened. And so because you're trying to fight this whole other part of maybe being, you know, your body interprets this as being attacked somehow with your social system. Anyway, so it results in higher inflammation, which is what was going on with me. Your gut microbiome, which all those organisms in there that help you digest food and all those good bacteria, they can actually leak out into other parts of your digestive system, and it causes...
That's not good.
It's not good. It causes inflammation and all kinds of stuff. So pain and changes in your gut microbiome. And then basically, if it's chronic and it becomes, you know, stress over time, your whole GI tract gets completely out of whack, and you can develop more chronic inflammatory disorders throughout your body. And that obviously can affect your mental health and your whole outlook on life. You know, if you're feeling crummy, you're going to be upset. And doctors think that if this goes on for about 6 months of grieving or more, you really should start getting help on both the mental side and the physical side. Talk to your GI about what's going on with your body. Talk to your therapist if you need it.
The effects of grief, I don't, like I said, I think most of us at this, I think most of our listeners are people that are my age or older.
Yeah.
I think we've experienced grief at some level.
Sure.
And I think without us, I mean, we you have some like clinical proof of it, but I think we all feel that too.
Oh,
like
sure.
When you're grieving, you don't feel like eating. If you do eat, your body is not happy about it. A lot of times you don't feel like doing anything. You just want to lay in the corner. And
that's the time when you really should be getting out there. Basically, there are five things you can do to deal with grief, and one of the most important things is to move.
Okay, let's get those five things right after this quick commercial break, because
I know you love lists. Yeah.
I know. We don't want to point out a problem and then not give some kind of solution to it. So we're going to do that when we come back with Marianne.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
And welcome back to the show. We're talking with Marianne Hamilton today about the effects of, well, the physical effects of grieving on the body. And Marianne says there are, we know there are real effects. And Marianne has some advice for us on how to combat those effects. We have, Marianne, about 8 minutes.
Okay. I think we can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah. So we have a list of five ways you can deal with grief and regulate your immune response.
Okay.
Okay. The first one might sound a little woo-woo, but it's basically moderating your thinking styles and your way of perceiving the world.
Ooh, that sounds hard.
It does.
It does.
But, you know, after you lose somebody, you think a lot about the past, of course, and maybe focus on the future. What if, what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Really, if you can just get yourself to think about where you are right now, get through each day, just practice that kind of mindfulness of, okay, what can I do today to make today better? And even meditation, if that's not too far out there for people, it really, really sort of helps to calm yourself and center yourself and think about just the here and now. That's a really important thing.
Okay. Number one, think about the here and now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Social relationships are super important. Like you started to say, it's really easy to curl up in the corner and kind of want to weep and
feel sorry for yourself.
Feel sorry for yourself, yeah. When really, 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 this is the most important time to reach out to your social network, your social connections, your family, your friends, who, when you're grieving, are often very, very, very eager to help you and try and comfort you.
They want to help. They just don't know what to do.
Exactly. Sometimes. And unless you are saying, hey, I need some help, I'm hurting, can you help me? They're probably going to want to say, well, let's just leave her alone for now. But if you can make that overture to say, hey, let's get together, or I just need to talk, that's super important.
Yeah. And a word of advice on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
Right after someone close to you passes away, everyone kind of gathers around you. And for like a day or two, everyone's there. And then they all leave and you're all of a sudden alone with your grief. Try to be that person that is there a day or two later too, that can be available. And like you said, you want to talk, or you want to go for a walk, or you want to, you know, watch a show together, whatever it is, just try to be that person that can kind of be there after the hullabaloo is over.
That's exactly what my sister-in-law said. And she was a Methodist pastor. She counsels a lot of people who are grieving. But she said, you know, her family was all coming in last week to be with her for several days. And she said, I know after they're gone, I'm going to be alone in this big house by myself thinking, what's my next chapter? Because she had actually retired from being a pastor to take care of my brother the last couple of years. And she said, I have to really think about what my next chapter is going to be.
Yeah.
And she said, that's when I'd love to have you come visit. So that's when we're going to be visiting.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Believe it or not, there are diets that can help you with...
Really?
Yeah. With helping with reducing the inflammation in the body, which is...
Not a cookie, then.
Not a cookie. Well, temporarily, that's helpful.
Okay.
Chocolate's always helpful in my book, for sure. But anti-inflammatory diet, not a surprise. Avoid processed foods and added sugar, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then prioritize lean proteins, fruit, vegetable, healthy oils, and leafy greens. That sounds boring and stupid, but it's going to fortify your body and give it what it needs to deal with you know, with grief and physical stress and mental stress. So super important to eat properly at this time instead of, you know, binging on ice cream, which is quite often.
I mean, it has its place. Yes, it does. We're not saying don't do that ever.
No, we're just saying sometimes, and
I've heard berries, like strawberries, blueberries, blackberries,
all
those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly. I have to say, Monday night when I was really struggling, Doug filled me full of bland pasta, which was great, and pasta and chocolate and a little bit of wine. It really got me through. Yeah.
Good job, Doug.
Yeah. He knows. And then Dr. Blodgett would appreciate this one, sleep. Very, very important.
Yes, very important.
And it's, you know, unfortunately, it sounds counterintuitive because quite often when you're stressed out, you can't sleep or you wake up thinking, I miss my loved one or something. So that's certainly a challenge for a lot of people. But a sense of purposelessness now can make it feel like, well, why should I even bother getting up? You know, my spouse is gone or I've lost this loved one. Why should, you know, I don't, can't make it through the day. But it's really, really important to get yourself on that schedule and sleep in regular hours and, again, fortify the system.
And a reminder, too, you know, taking sleep aids, if you can't sleep, that's okay. But remember, you're not getting real restorative, restful sleep if you're using drugs or whatever it is, because you're basically sedated. You're not sleeping, you're sedated.
Yeah.
And that's different. And that's not, you're not going to get that deep restorative sleep. Dr. Blodgett reminds me of this all the time. I'm like, ah, I couldn't sleep. I said, I'd take. And he's like, well, you can take that if you can't sleep. But just so you know, it's in your system. You're probably not going deep down in the sleep like you need to do. So
I've noticed that for some reason in the last week, I have not felt like I've been in really the deep REM sleep, and I'm having the most bizarre dreams.
Really?
Just bizarre.
Really?
I don't know where they're coming from, but.
Do you remember that? That's one of the, I'll have a bizarre dream, but within 20 minutes of waking up, I can't remember it.
I told a coworker at the city, I woke up laughing because I dreamt that she had just come from giving a Tim talk, not a TED talk, but a Tim talk.
A Tim talk. That's a new one, huh?
A new one. And I said, what were you talking about? And she said, potatoes. And she was talking about
this must have been up in Idaho,
potatoes,
right?
Potatoes and meatballs. I have no clue where that came from, but I woke up laughing.
With a chance of meatballs and potatoes.
Nice, yeah. Anyway, I know we have just a minute left, but finally the last.
That's a little fast, so we actually have about 2.5.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. The most important one for me, of course, is staying physically active. And again, when you're depressed, you're sad, you're feeling purposelessness, maybe the last thing you want to do is get up and move. But I've always, always found that when I'm feeling the worst, just getting out of the house and going for a walk is super helpful. Getting some fresh air, getting some vitamin D, doing whatever, if you feel like you can indulge in whatever sport you usually like to play, those things are all such a great, great, great way to relieve your stress and relieve your mind.
And it's not easy. As you say that, I was thinking about a couple of times when I was really experiencing some great sadness in my life. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, well, why don't you go out, go for a walk, go for a hike, go play pickleball. And I was like, I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Because you don't feel like it, right? You have to make yourself do it. But once you do it, and that's what I did. I made myself do it. I was like, I'm so glad I did this.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to say was one of the most important, interesting things of this whole research study about the effects of grief. One of the most pro-inflammatory risk factors is high adipose tissue.
Okay.
It's fat.
Oh.
Yeah, fat. So if you're carrying some extra weight or you're not, not exercising, that could really increase all the inflammatory responses that your body is going through, which is going to make you feel worse.
Now, we're not saying just because you're carrying some extra weight that you're doomed. Mm-hmm. We're just saying, you know, if you can get out there and make an effort to get rid of some of that, it's going to help.
And it's just going to make your brain feel better, and that's going to help your body feel better, and it'll get you through. And don't be afraid to ask for friends for some help if you need it.
And Marianne has been on enough times that we know that, listen, emotions affect your physical body. They really do. A perfect example of that today. And, even things like, you know, you talked about getting your hearing aids taken care of. And it's just like, you know, if you can't hear, you can't participate. If you can't participate, you're lonely. You might be in a room full of people, and they all love you, but if you can't hear them, you're lonely.
You're isolated, and that's just going to make you feel sadder, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Marianne, thanks for the counsel and advice today.
I'm sorry to be kind of a bummer today, Andy, but...
I'm sorry you had to go through that, but...
Well, we all do.
It is life, unfortunately.
It is part of life.
Yeah, it is. So,
always good to see you, though.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get Marianne's million-dollar smile back. So, thanks, everybody, for listening today. Dr. Blodgett on tomorrow. I'm Andy Griffin. We'll talk to you then. Bye, Marianne.
Bye, Andy.